From Altoona to Beaver Falls, Erie to Gettysburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the American Legislative Exchange Council has just published its 2019 Rich States, Poor States report on state economic competitiveness. The report's co-author, Jonathan Williams, joins David Taylor and Rebecca Euler for a Capital Watch roundtable discussion. And Exelon wants a $500 million taxpayer bailout of its underperforming nuclear plants. I'll have a town hall commentary on why such a subsidy would be the death of Pennsylvania's competitive energy market. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Jonathan Williams and our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. Democrat presidential candidate Bernie Sanders campaigned in Pennsylvania this past week, participating in a Fox News town hall event in the Lehigh Valley, but it would appear he has his work cut out for him if he wants to win next year's presidential primary. An Allentown Morning Call Muhlenberg College poll finds former Vice President Joe Biden currently leads Sanders 28% to 16% in the Keystone State. Eight other candidates were included in the poll, but none cracked into double digits. Some 20% indicated they are currently undecided. But it is still early. The Pennsylvania presidential primary will be held next April. According to Pennsylvania Watchdog, the number of students attending Pennsylvania's colleges and universities has declined, and that trend is expected to continue. Birth rates are down, indicating the downward trend in enrollment is likely to continue for the foreseeable future. Pennsylvania's state system of higher education has been beset with financial problems in recent years, as rising tuition makes college unaffordable for more students. Overbuilding of the system, coupled with crippling union contracts, have made the system increasingly uncompetitive. An analysis of gaming revenue by the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy in Pittsburgh finds the bulk of those dollars are coming from Pennsylvanians. Gaming has undergone dramatic expansion over the past decade, and part of the rationale was to draw in customers from other states. But neighboring states have also increased gaming, cutting into revenue growth at Pennsylvania casinos. The state's latest foray, this into sports gambling, is thus far not proving to be the windfall that was expected. The Institute reports revenue is about half of initial projections. Are you looking to buy a new vehicle? This might be a good time. The six-month average of dealer stocks of cars and trucks finds a 75-day supply on hand. That is the largest inventory since 2009. According to Bloomberg News, the inventory of furniture and clothing also is abnormally high. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Many factors combine to form a state's business climate. Taken together, those factors help to determine whether or not businesses will expand or locate within a given state. So how does Pennsylvania fare? David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association and Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business get details from Jonathan Williams. Jonathan is co-author of the American Legislative Exchange Council's Rich States, Poor States report. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Rebecca, thanks for being on the show.
Happy to be here again, David. Thank you.
Well, what do we do all day, in and out? We work for Pennsylvania competitiveness.
Yes.
We want it to be the smart business decision for people to choose to invest and hire and locate and expand here in Pennsylvania rather than in one of our competitor states, because obviously in a free country with a free economy, all of these choices are voluntary.
That's right. I think we believe that Pennsylvania is a very special state, and we have a lot going for us here, and we want to do everything we can to increase the competitiveness of the business environment here so more people can enjoy our wonderful state.
Exactly. And that, again, when it comes to how well Pennsylvania performs in that competition between the states for investment and jobs and economic growth, the decisions that get made in the state capitol have a profound real-world impact. And so this is why I'm so pleased to welcome to the program our friend Jonathan Williams, who's the chief economist and vice president of the American Legislative Exchange Council. Jonathan, thank you for being with us.
Well, thanks so much for having me back on the show. And as I always say, greetings from the land of make-believe down here in Washington, D.C.
Well, this is the time of the year, Jonathan, where you and your co-authors, Art Laffer and Steve Moore, give America a reality check with your annual Rich States, Poor States report to benchmark the performance of the states relative to one another in that competition for investment and jobs and growth. What's the news with the latest Rich States, Poor States report?
Well, it's been now 12 years that we've put in together this research with those two fine gentlemen that I've worked with, and we really have seen some amazing things over this dozen years. We have seen some great movement in states in the last 5 years alone, just on a macro level here, David. We've seen more than 30 states significantly reduce their tax burden in order to become more competitive for that job creation and economic development that you led off with here, and I think that's an important trend in that with a relative index such as ours that measures 15 different factors, taxes, regulation, labor policy, things we know matter for economic growth and job creation, sometimes you can fall behind simply by standing still. And if you're not moving in the right direction, relatively you're moving in the wrong direction just because there's so many states that are trying to become more competitive. And another big kind of broad phenomenon, which is the Federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which is something that we hadn't seen, a broad rewrite of our federal tax system in more than 30 years since Ronald Reagan. And what that has meant for the states is unforeseen surplus dollars in many cases, not just because of the economic growth impact of federal tax reform and lowering our business tax in the United States to become now competitive again with the rest of the world and our trading partners, but the effect that when state tax codes, Pennsylvania is a little unique in this regard, but as most states that have state-level income taxes link their tax codes to the federal tax code, what we've seen is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for many state lawmakers to have surpluses that were ongoing, that were unbudgeted, and using those surpluses to cut their tax rates to become even more competitive. That's exactly what federal tax reform has unleashed across the United States this last year, and it's been really phenomenal to watch states be more competitive. So when it comes to Pennsylvania, unfortunately, you know, you all have not moved in the direction of cutting tax rates aggressively. Of course, you have many in the legislature that would like to see that, but I think you fall into the camp of falling behind by standing still, unfortunately.
Well, before we get to Pennsylvania and how we stack up in the latest report, let's go and talk about the top handful of states and what they're doing right.
Utah has been number one for all 12 editions of Rich States, Poor States, believe it or not.
I believe it, actually.
It has been an incredible, incredible record that they've been able to maintain. And, of course, once you're at the top, as if within any professional sporting event, everyone's eyes are on you and they're looking to the top of the leader. So it's even more incredible that for 12 years in a row, Utah's kept that mantle. And a couple of reasons why I think they've been able to do that. And one is the property tax system that they have in Utah. It's something that gets complained about in many cases. I know Pennsylvania is not unique in that local property tax bills are aggressively going upwards in the wrong direction in many cases. But what Utah has done is they have, I think, solved that issue to a large degree because of their truth in taxation law. And what that does is it stops the assessment-driven property tax problem. When local officials will look at you straight in the face and tell you they've just cut your property tax rate, and then you go and look at your bill and it's actually larger than it was the year before, and you realize that it was driven by assessments going up. And of course, public officials at the local level many times never have to take a recorded vote on those type of assessments. Utah changed that, and they actually require local officials to vote if they're going to collect more in property taxes than they did the year before. So something very innovative that I'd love to see more states adopt. But secondly, and I think perhaps even more importantly on a dollar's scope, and this is they have really bent the cost curve, so to speak, to borrow a term from the last administration here in Washington, D.C., on what I think is the existential financial crisis facing state and local budgets across the country, and that is the unfunded public pension and health care obligations that really threaten to cripple state budgets and really cause future tax increases. Utah has moved towards the defined contribution 401k style approach several years ago and has been a godsend for their fiscal health and sustainability in Utah. You know, they're followed by states like Idaho, North Dakota, Nevada, and Indiana from the Midwest now that is in the top five.
Well, and Indiana, as Rebecca and I know, is just on the other side of Ohio. So that is, I mean, Indiana is a prime competitor. And when you compare the kind of leadership and direction that Indiana has had versus Illinois since the financial crisis, that you see the clearest possible delta on what competitiveness at the state capitals means.
Well, it really is a stark contrast, a tale of two states, if you will, between Illinois and Indiana. And being a Michigan native myself and seeing it close up for so many years, I can tell you that talking to so many of those job creators that were former Illinois job creators are now our job creators in Indiana because of right to work, because of tax reform, and many of the things that Mitch Daniels and Mike Pence kicked off, they're still really reaping the dividends from those actions in previous years. You know, and you look at the Midwest, if we talked to 5 years ago, and in fact, we have talked 5 years ago, David, and the Midwest, though, has seen some massive improvements overall when it comes to their competitiveness. And of course, that has direct implications for Pennsylvania, with my home state of Michigan this year coming in at its best all-time record at number 12 in economic competitiveness. And, you know, if we were having this conversation 10 to 12 years ago, and we mentioned even in the same sentence that Michigan would be in the top 15 for economic outlook, people would have said you're crazy. But because of many of those free market reforms that my home state has accomplished, as well as Indiana and Ohio, a big improver also over these dozen years, there are some very good success stories on one hand, but some big threats to Pennsylvania on the other.
Well, it just goes to show it can be done. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania, and our special guest, Jonathan Williams from the American Legislative Exchange Council, talking about the new Rich States, Poor States report. And so, again, let's just real briefly, let's name off the bottom states, and then we'll segue and talk about how Pennsylvania is doing.
So the bottom of the list is not going to have any surprises to many of your listeners, and that is New York, 50th out of 50, and they've been that way now for 6 years in a row. The New York Post just editorialized on our new findings, talking about how this massive combination of high tax burdens and debt and high regulatory and labor costs have been toxic for New York. And, of course, don't just take our word for it. The proof is in the pudding. Over the last decade alone, New York has lost more than 1.3 million Americans to the other 49 states as they vote with their pocketbooks and vote with their feet to places with more economic opportunity. And, David, by the way, New York is going to probably lose one, if not two, new U.S. House districts after the census of 2020 because of this out-migration. So they're not only paying an economic consequence, they're playing a political consequence as well. Bernie Sanders, Vermont, comes in at 49th. Illinois, as we've discussed, has been suffering tremendously because of big government policies at 48th. California and New Jersey round out the bottom five. And once again, no surprises because of that big government tax and spend outlook in those bottom five states.
The economic outlook for Pennsylvania, we are coming in right dead at the bottom of the middle here, around 37. And I looked at the past 12 years of the report, and the best we've ever done here in Pennsylvania for economic outlook was 33 in 2014. So I guess you could say that last year we were 37 and we're up to 30, or sorry, we were 38 last year, we're up to 37 this year. Are we on an upward trend? I don't know that you could make a case that a one point improvement in that score is an upward trend, but we've been hovering right below average, as David said. And for economic performance, you have us at a 33, again, below average, really disappointing.
So Jonathan, how do we get there and how do we turn it around?
Well, you know, this is a long-term trend, as you've pointed out, that you've been below average, in some cases cracking into the bottom 10 for economic outlook in 2015, for instance. It's going to take some time, but, you know, the optimistic piece of this is that, you know, Michigan turned it around within a decade of its single-state recession period. So it can be done, and we're not talking about a pension crisis issue where it's going to take 20 to 30 years to get your way out of it. This is something that can be done on a much more immediate basis. And a few of the things that stand out are the 15 equally weighted factors is you're shooting yourself in the foot. It's really economic malpractice for Pennsylvania to have a corporate combined tax rate of second highest in America. Only New York is higher. You also have something such as a death tax, which so many states, including Ohio and Indiana and others in the region, have repealed. Even Delaware, under a Democrat governor and Democrat legislature, repealed its death tax in the last couple of years. So having those two things really do stick out. Obviously, not being a right-to-work state now with the Midwest all becoming right-to-work states, save Illinois. And you add that to the other tax burdens that are no surprise to your listeners that you pay in Pennsylvania, and you really do get a sense that there's three or four of those really key variables in this index that have shifted and have made more free market and pro taxpayer friendly. You could see some significant gains for the state of Pennsylvania in future years.
To the point of significant gains, I think that's a great point because we haven't been able to make significant gains. There's an inheritance tax bill, a death tax bill moving the legislature right now that would remove the death tax for children who inherit their parents' assets who are under the age of 21, which I just find appalling that they pay a tax anyway. But that's sort of chipping at the edges of this overall policy of a death tax. And we can't seem to make any headway, and let's just repeal it. You know, let's get rid of it. I think it needs to just go. It's unfair.
Absolutely. Pennsylvania is fortunate in that our Constitution requires that taxes be equally applied so that we do not have escalating rates with Pennsylvania state taxes, that we have flat rates. So as Illinois, you know, spirals further towards disaster, you have a governor out there who's working to remove that provision from their constitution so that they can put in place escalating rates and further soak upper end taxpayers. What's that going to do to Illinois?
Illinois should be a booming state with Chicago, with its just inherent advantages there, and industry based in Chicago for many, many decades, being really at the heartland and the crossroads of America, with infrastructure being on the Great Lakes as well as the rail and the highway infrastructure. Illinois should be booming, but policymakers in Springfield are doing their darndest to really make that business climate very unapproachable for many individuals and businesses. And you add that progressive income tax or discriminatory income tax that they will likely put in their state constitution in the next year or two to the $15 an hour minimum wage that passed earlier this year in Springfield with no exclusion, meaningful exclusion for small business or for rural areas of the state. And you look at the out-migration of a state like Illinois that's already down something like 800,000 on net over the last decade, and I fully expect that Illinois will further depopulate. And what that means is lots of opportunities for surrounding states that want to welcome job creators into their state lines. There's a strong migration pull from the Carolinas out of Pennsylvania, certainly also Florida, and no income tax states like Florida and Texas. But let's face it, Pennsylvania is not blessed with the kind of winter weather that they have down south, and so it makes it even more important to keep residents and businesses in Pennsylvania, that you get it right when it comes to public policy. The South can get away with a little bit more because of better winter weather, but at the end of the day, it's not about weather, as some left-leaning economists will say. They'll say until they're blue in the face that taxes don't matter. It's all about weather. I always ask them, explain the California situation, some of the best weather on the face of the earth, and yet California is hemorrhaging jobs and individuals to other states.
What does that body of work stand for?
Well, it's an amazing value, I think, for people to study this on a public policy basis, on a political science basis, to look at what states have done over that long of a period on a consistent time series. But the lessons that we take away from it are awfully clear, in that spending and taxing are the two sides of the same coin, and that states need, if they want to keep taxes down for the long term, they need to control government growth to make sure they're not growing faster than the economy. They look at ways to become more competitive. I mean, over this last 5 years alone, 30-plus states have significantly reduced their tax burdens. You look over a longer period, we find even more states. And, you know, that phenomenon that I talked about earlier, if you can fall behind by simply standing still, we look at some of the states in the index over now 12 years that have really done nothing horribly wrong for their states, except that they've been just passed by so many states that have been aggressive in terms of trying to pursue economic development and pro-taxpayer policies.
And we've seen that in Pennsylvania also, even in the recent uptick in the economy, that the gains that Pennsylvania has made have been less than the national average.
And you look at where the dynamics have really changed, and a couple of the big variables have been business tax rates, that states realize that on a dynamic basis, corporate income taxes bring in next to no revenue when it comes to how much businesses can relocate to avoid high tax rates. And so one of the most successful tax reforms in the last couple of decades was North Carolina's, and guess what their corporate rate is today? It's 2.5%.
Wow.
And compare that against the Pennsylvania rate, when you add the state and local together being in the double digits, that is a really, as Art Laffer always says, this isn't rocket surgery. This is basic econ 101. You tax something, you get less of it. And the other phenomenon has just been how many states have become right-to-work states. The yes or no variable for economic development officials, as we've talked to site selectors, they say a state's resume doesn't even make it into the next round of questions in many cases if it's not a right-to-work state. So while Pennsylvania may not have been so isolated 12 years ago as not being a right-to-work state, now with Michigan and Ohio and Indiana, for instance, and Wisconsin and in Kentucky and states across the country moving in that direction, and Ohio, I think, going to be considering it very soon, this really does isolate Pennsylvania even more.
Well, Jonathan, this is the last of the time that we have with you. I am going to declare you a national treasure. Thank you so much, you and Laffer and Moore, for the annual Rich States, Poor States Report. Where can people go online to take a look at your handiwork?
Well, thank you, my friend. And it's richstatespoorstates.org and alec.org to check it out.
Outstanding. Jonathan Williams, Chief Economist and Vice President of the American Legislative Exchange Council. Thanks so much. Rebecca, where can the listeners go to learn more about you and your work, the things that you're doing?
They can check out NFIB Pennsylvania at nfib.com/PA or on Facebook or Twitter.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So from Rebecca and me, thanks again to Jonathan Williams, and thanks to all of you for listening. We'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Exelon, the hugely profitable energy company, wants a bailout. Taxpayers can pay all $500 million at once or take advantage of a convenient monthly payment plan in the form of higher electric bills. Either way, Exelon wants you to pay for their underperforming nuclear power plants. After raking in billions in stranded costs as Pennsylvania transitioned into a competitive energy market, Exelon now finds several of its nuclear power plants unable to compete economically with cheaper and abundant natural gas in the generation of electricity. Having thus benefited from free markets, the energy giant wants a return to government subsidies after having failed to adjust to changing market conditions. Exelon has deployed an army of lobbyists in Harrisburg to spin the yarn that closing two of their nuclear plants would somehow endanger the region's electricity supply. Were that true, of course, the plants would be making money and a bailout would not be necessary. One of the plants is the damaged Three Mile Island facility south of the state capital. 40 years ago, disaster was narrowly averted when there was an uncontrolled meltdown in one of its reactors. The plant has been operating at partial capacity ever since, undoubtedly contributing to its economic inefficiency. Aside from being unprofitable and home to a damaged reactor, TMI, as it is commonly known, poses a security risk. Harrisburg International Airport lies literally in the shadow of the TMI cooling towers. In an age of heightened concern over terrorist attacks, such proximity to an airport renders the facility vulnerable. Thus, its closing might be a blessing in disguise. Exelon has been pressuring lawmakers for a $500 million infusion of taxpayer dollars, read bailout, to allow to keep TMI and the Beaver Valley nuclear plant in western Pennsylvania open. The company is apparently unwilling to dip into its own profits to do this, and with a cash-strapped state budget, legislators appear unwilling or unable to dish out the requested corporate welfare. Sensing that, Exelon's army of lobbyists have set about asking to have nuclear power included in something called the Alternative Energy Portfolio Standard, AEPS. That's a program designed to keep uncompetitive so-called renewable energy sources, like windmills and solar power, in the business of chopping up and frying birds. Basically, the program requires that a certain percentage of energy from such sources be purchased and distributed in the power grid, regardless of cost. The effective end result is a ratepayer subsidy of expensive and uncompetitive energy sources. Exelon argues it is the only non-fossil fuel source of energy not included in the portfolio, and it wants to be added. Of course, there's an easy way to level that playing field. Abolish the AEPS entirely and let free markets purchase energy from the most cost-efficient sources. Alas, Exelon is not alone in ditching free markets when it comes to their bottom line. The Mercatus Center at George Mason University recently conducted a poll entitled A Culture of Favoritism, Corporate Privilege and Beliefs About Markets and Government. The poll found that companies big enough to effectively lobby government believe that markets should be more heavily regulated and, unsurprisingly, competition limited by government is good for business. According to the Mercatus survey, these companies believe business success is based more upon their knowledge of influential policymakers and government assistance than it is on consumer focus or having a unique and innovative business model. They also, of course, believe that government should favor specific businesses and industries so long as they're the favored business. A consequence of this, Mercatus scholars concluded, is that the, quote, culture of favoritism is expensive to taxpayers and consumers. It may also undermine the public's faith in markets and economic freedom. If such attitudes persist or expand, then free, open, and competitive markets may be in peril. We risk stunted economic growth, wasted resources, and higher levels of corruption as a result, end quote. All of those negative consequences, not to mention significantly higher consumer electric bills, will follow in the wake of any bailout or move to add nuclear power to the AEPS. The taxpayers and electric ratepayers of Penns Woods should pay close attention to how this plays out over the coming weeks and months. It is a pitched battle between free energy markets and corporate greed. If Exelon wins, a competitive energy market in Pennsylvania will be a thing of the past, and you will pay for it with a higher monthly electric bill. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WTKT-AM in Harrisburg, WHHS-FM in Haverton, along with WDAD-AM and WQMU-FM in Indiana, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
We'll be right back.